can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later,
all right, gotta cut you down. Matt Braggin's coming up. I want to get into geopolitics with him. Trump, this whole thing with the Air Force One escapes while leaving journalists on decoy flights. We reported that back at the time in July. And I'm not in the business of just defending Trump to defend him. Anybody that measures what we do and knows, I just call balls and strikes. My computing power couldn't even begin to ever try to, like, what do I want to say that's popular? How do I want to, you know, be on the, you know, I don't even do that. I've always neurotically just said what I think is the best information. I'm usually right. This is a nothing burger, like the ballroom thing. Trump just wants to have a ballroom. Every other government has it. The media made it a big distraction. It's totally stupid. There's plenty to criticize Trump on that matters. They have been moving presidents around for 60, 70 years off Air Force One onto other craft and putting them in, you know, taco trucks and putting them in ambulances and moving them around other jets because of service-to-air missiles, potential bombs, all the rest of it. The idea that he sent everybody off on Air Force One to be killed and they thought the Iranians were about to shoot it down or whatever. You get on Air Force One, you know you're on a major target. Okay? And so I didn't get to that today because it's the big story and we're supposed to cover that. You know, it's the new reflecting pool thing. And it's just a load of crap. Oh, Trump cuts and runs like a coward. Now, I've told you service-to-air missiles, and they're going to try to frame the Iranians for shooting down his plane. I said that before they ever started promoting it. So it's a real threat to Air Force One. The Iranians have threatened him, but then they don't have the ability in many points. The globalists, though, because the Iranians have threatened, would be perfect for them to shoot him down and then get full war out of his death. So I'm really concerned about this. But the whole story about Trump cuts and runs, Trump has incredible courage. Nobody's going to deny that. Trump gets out in front of crowds when they block the road and marches into event centers. Y'all criticize Trump all day, but a coward, and the Secret Service tells him we've got a threat, so he listens to them, and then he's a coward, and he cut everybody, you know, loose and hung them out to dry. It's a load of crap for people that don't know how things work. Every major president, particularly the last 50 years, does this all the time. It's come out that they will act like they're getting on, get on another plane. This is what they do. So Trump, yeah, gets on an airport catering truck, goes to another jet, and that's because they're leaving Turkey. They think Iran is going to have missiles they smuggle into the country to shoot it down. And Iran has said they might do that. So that's the problem. Iran has set it up where they're saying they'll do it. They might. And then now that helps Israel or other interests that want to get rid of Trump and supercharge the war. That invites them to do it. And I've been talking about this for 3 years, months before it ever even started getting promoted. I could just see the programming. Just remember, before you ever heard of any of this, I was telling you about it. That's what I do. That's my bread and butter. So just calling balls and strikes here, folks. This is an absolute made-up piece of BS. And I noticed that whenever I do something defending Trump, the Trump supporters, the hardcore ones, are the ones that are like, you piece of crap. Don't try to get back at our good steads. You're not at the Trump, Ludnig, Epstein table. We don't want you back. I'm not trying to be in your cool table. I report what I believe is accurate, what is true and what is not. I just keep explaining to you the left, the white pillars, the black pillars, everybody. I report what I believe is the most accurate. I don't have the brain power to sit there and try to figure out what I want to believe. God, that sounds like mental illness to me. In fact, that is mental illness. People ask how I know so many factoids, how I'm so accurate, because I literally apply everything. You remember when I, like 5 years ago, cops pulled me over, brought me to my house. They go, have you been drinking? And I said, yeah, I was just at a Japanese restaurant. I had a half bottle of sake. And I should have said, by the way, it was like a little quarter bottle, but they said, get out, sobriety test. And I passed it. They still said, well, you admitted you're going to jail. And I blew away under it and they had to drop it. But the point was, everybody said, why didn't you lie? It was like a neurotic thing that I just don't lie, folks. I used to, when I was younger, lie some. I basically don't lie now. It's crazy. It's very liberating.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision. and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Well, I didn't expect to be back so soon, 24 hours later. As usual, I'm pulling everything out of my third point of contact with not that much time for show prep. But fortunately, I'm a person with many slides already ready to go. And today I'm going to not talk about Iran or Ukraine or the American economy or Trump playing golf with anti-aircraft missiles behind him. Or hiding out, you know, jumping between Air Force One and Air Force Two and some other plane, because I've got an actual guest from Ireland on today, and we're going to switch gears a little bit because, as far as I'm concerned, Ireland is like the test case number one for population replacement. There's a lot of reasons for this. You know, it's a small homogeneous island. You know, it's one people. For the last several centuries, divided roughly, you know, 85-15 Catholic Protestant, but they all consider themselves Irish. Even the Northern Irish Protestants also consider themselves members of the United Kingdom, but Irish. They definitely are not to be confused with Scots or Welshmen. And as a result, Ireland is a very nice little lab petri dish for a complete total population replacement. And they're the people in the Republic of Ireland, if you can stick up that slide number 6, it's an actual map of the United Kingdom and Ireland, because a lot of Americans still, I think, are a little bit confused or vague on what is meant by Ireland. I constantly see references to the IRA in terms of what's going on in Ireland. Now the one that's Ireland, I'll get to that one later, but the one that just shows Ireland and the United Kingdom next to it, I think it's number 8. I'm sorry, can't read my own writing. But the problem is that Americans think that the IRA was just some Irish phenomenon. They were running all over the Republic, all over Ireland. So they say, Matt, where's the IRA? Well, in most of Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, there was no IRA for the last century. You know, there was an IRA in Dublin and Cork in like 1922 when the Irish broke away from Great Britain. But they were not active in the South. This is strictly a phenomenon of Northern Ireland, Ulster. That's the 6 lost counties. When they had the treaty after gaining independence, those 6 counties remained with the United Kingdom. So Americans who think, well, the IRA is just going to like rise spontaneously and save Ireland, it has nothing to do with the Republic of Ireland. What all you people that remember it all, what happened from the 70s to the 90s, it happened only in the 6 counties in the north. In the south, in the other 26 counties, the Irish people have been bred for total docility. For more than a century, they've been bred to be peaceful hotel innkeepers, tour guides, bus drivers of tourists, pub bartenders, but not fighters. They have no fighting spirit. So what's you know being held up is all the pictures by me. This is all Northern Ireland stuff. Okay, this is Northern Ireland stuff. In the main part of Ireland, if you can you know possibly stick up that number 8, because it's important people understand this. That those people have almost no defense mechanism. It's like they've been bred into being dodo birds. You know, that they've been bred into being you know, lap dogs, poodles with no defense mechanism. So that you can see in the green, that's Ireland. Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. That's the only part of Ireland where people have any kind of a fighting memory. You know, because their grandfathers and their uncles might have been young men fighting during the Troubles in those 6 counties. That does not relate to the rest of Ireland. And so the rest of Ireland is just ripe for a fall. It's extremely woke. They were heavily brainwashed, you know, during the 2000s and on, what was once called the Celtic miracle, the Celtic tiger was basically the Dublin government saying to international corporations, you want people that are pretty smart, that can speak English and run telecom stations and internet websites, and will host any kind of corporation, pharmaceuticals, you name it, just come to Ireland, very low taxes. So Ireland just laid itself open to the world. Just come on, bring money, invest. But the Irish people now are almost like strangers in their own land. They live in Ireland, but they have no control. Their politicians, the political class, are completely beholden to you know the European Union in Brussels and to the corporations that they sold out to. So the Irish people are just being sent right down the river. Now, I don't know if my my friend Peter Connolly, is he up on the in another Zoom room? Because I'm going to talk to a guy. It's evening in Ireland right now. So are you there, Peter?
Good evening or good afternoon,
Matt. Peter Connolly. Hey, good. Can you turn it up? I can barely hear you.
How's that now?
That's pretty good. So we were talking before the show. We were talking and one of the subjects that I saw just absolutely flood the Twitter zone in the last few days is the rise of the new IRA, which we were discussing is a totally bogus. It's a psyop. It's a false flag. It's a honeypot thing by the government, but it's not legit. So yeah, the pictures of the bonfire and all of that, it's not what's going on in Ireland right now. Okay. It's like, unfortunately, there is no real resistance spirit like that yet, but go ahead. Peter, the bonfire stuff is not what's happening in Ireland. Go ahead,
no,
Peter.
I mean, the bonfires is typically associated, you know, with the 12th of, not that I get my dates wrong, but the 12th of July, and amongst the large amount of the community, if you want to call it, like in terms of the Protestants associated with Northern Ireland, and look, that's their thing, you know, that's what they do, and I suppose what we've seen in recent times, I suppose first coming onto the news probably about a year ago was an incident that took place in a town called Ballymena in Northern Ireland, where there was a news story running about a number of young girls that had been sexually assaulted and that kind of thing. And I think watching from the south, the community spirit in both with Catholics and Protestants has always, but I would actually say more so with Protestants, has always been very strong throughout the years. It always has been apparent in terms of much more of a kind of a community spirit
in the north. In Ulster, in the north.
in the north of Ireland. And so, I mean, what we witnessed again, you know, was we saw a huge protest take place in the town of Ballymena. And people may recall there was a number of days of kind of whatever term you want to use in terms of civil unrest for a number of days that took place after that. And I suppose this has one of the avenues in terms of, you know, we mentioned that earlier on today about the 200 men coming across on a boat to the UK. But what is happening is that they will make their way through the UK, and they will be able to make their way, obviously, because it's part of the United Kingdom, into Northern Ireland. And then because of the no border situation that exists between Northern Ireland and the Republic, and that this was all part of what was discussed going back a number of years, whatever it is it 92 or 98 in terms of the Good Friday Agreement? But there is no hard border between the north and the south of Ireland. So for somebody to make
there's no check at all. You just drive. You just get in a cab or a bus and drive.
Yeah. And I mean, even on the opposite side to this as well, is that this kind of freedom of movement in a certain way, or lack of checks and that kind of thing, is that, you know, in a criminal situation, it's very easy also for somebody within the Republic to make their way into Northern Ireland, part of the UK, and then, you know, to wherever in the world. But there's always been, I think, a good community spirit that within the communities in Northern Ireland. And obviously, we've seen this as to how this has developed since what we had with Ballymena last year. I suppose, you know,
but that's because the memory of the troubles is still fresh in the north, because it's in living memory. At a family reunion, a gathering, a picnic, there are older men there that remember the troubles, but not in the Republic of Ireland. Nobody in the Republic of Ireland has the experience.
I can't speak of that in terms of the younger generation. And as we've discussed before, like anybody realistically less than the age of 45. On this island, whether you're in Northern Ireland or in Southern in the Republic, does not have a memory per se of firsthand experience of the troubles in Northern Ireland. If you are in some sort of ways, that is something that has been passed on to you with stories and that kind of thing from the older generations. So, so this is the confusion I would see at the moment, and it's up for question as to kind of where exactly is this coming from. That the reemergence of such an organization and branding themselves or calling themselves the new IRA. Now, just
I have a slide of that. I have a slide of that. I think it's number 7, and it's just so inorganic. It's so fake.
Yeah, the last 10 days to 2 weeks as well. We also had a security operation that took place here in the Republic, where I mentioned it, there was a news article in relation to a young woman being intercepted trying to drive a viable device, from what we gather, in the direction of somewhere, you know, maybe Belfast or something like that, into the north of Ireland. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, that's the Isabella Sullivan case. So yeah, Isabella Sullivan, you know, is caught with what, you know, the makings of a car bomb, and is arrested and then released. So it just doesn't seem like it doesn't smell right to me. It sounds like they're trying to raise a hysteria.
You know, there is that kind of thing in terms of what we would refer to as kind of, you know, agitation, propagation propaganda to try and agitate a situation. And, you know, with what I've mentioned in that happened last year in Ballymena, and just coming back to this point in terms of both sides of the community being faced with the kind of the fallout from what is taking place with both, I would argue, the point of both legal and illegal immigration in terms of people coming onto this island, with it could be argued the point of, you know, varying ways of looking at life. And so, you know, this, I suppose, in some ways, I don't know, you could say that, you know, maybe to some extent has united communities, but more so it's that both communities are facing the same, you know,
when you say both communities, you're speaking about Northern Ireland Protestants and Catholics. So in that context, the last thing that would be organic would be for a new group to rise across Ireland calling itself the new IRA, because this would be immediately, like a red flag to a bull, this would immediately alienate all of the Protestants in Ireland, especially in Northern Ireland, because the IRA, Irish Republican Army, was dedicated to the unification of the entire Ireland, of the entire island of Ireland, you know, under one tricolor flag. And to call yourself the new IRA is automatically to split what was beginning to be a unified front against the mass migration.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's just sometime there last week, earlier on in the week, maybe the Monday even, where one of the first news articles that I was looking at of that day was the, if you remember from days of old, the Republican leader in Gerry Adams was making this news conference. Now, one of the things that caught my attention out of it with what he was talking about was that he was, so in the United Kingdom, they have a new prime minister, Andy Burnham, and he was, Gerry Adams was making reference to the fact that one of the new UK prime minister's order of business would be that to look at the eventual action to separate Northern Ireland from the United Kingdom. I mean, that's an absolute red rag to a bull. Like, and I'm looking at this and I have two questions in my mind. You know, first of all, this is a character, you know, a political character from many years back. And I'm kind of saying, well, where did you come from? And secondly, yeah, how preposterous an idea that you would suggest this. But, you know, more and more, and we've seen the, you know, we've seen.
Yeah, I consider it a discrediting operation. You know, this might seem afield, but it reminds me of when Lindsey Graham, who recently died, he sabotaged the Republicans in a midterm a couple of election cycles ago by just before the election. This is when the whole Roe v. Wade abortion thing was in front of the Supreme Court, very contentious issue. And he suddenly was promoting a super strict abortion law. And the only reason to do this would be to scupper the Republican midterms. Yeah, you know, he was a guy who's an operative, who you know, a big neocon war hawk, but he would you know, do things to sabotage the Republicans. So Gerry Adams being brought out of the crypt, you know, out of the old folks' home, to talk about reunification, and then all of a sudden across all mainstream media in the UK is the rise of the new IRA, which, if I was going to make an American comparison, if somebody without any, you know, there's no meetings, no rallies, suddenly if all of our media were talking about the rise of the new KKK and how they're like the new face of the anti-migration, anti-immigration in America, and then show pictures of burning crosses and people in white hoods, and say, this is the new anti-immigration movement, the new KKK. Nobody in America would believe it. It would be even, you know, more laughable than the Patriot Front in terms of an operation. But in Ireland, to have a new group called the new IRA is only designed to discredit. It's called a discrediting operation. It's a variety of a false flag. A discrediting operation. So you tie anybody who wants to stop unlimited immigration into Ireland to terrorists. And, you know, you happen to find this 25-year-old lady with the makings of a car bomb. You know, ooh, alarm bells go off. Of course, she's released. It was what they call a controlled delivery, I think. You know, it's like when the FBI stops a terror plot that they completely created, you know, that so that they can take credit for stopping one. So I think this is what's going on in Ireland right now. And in a way, I guess it's a good sign because it shows that the government's very worried about this, that you know, that the possibility of Protestants and Catholics joining around stopping this uncontrolled immigration. I mean, maybe that's a good sign because, you know, the way that it's going, you were saying in the last year, they've granted 500,000 new passports. This is in an island with what, like four and a half actual Irish and another million plus.
5.2, 5.2 million. And just one of the stats there today was about the issuing. Now, you to look at the wording of this carefully, but the issuing of 500,000 passports. So, you know, as to whether that's new passport, older, you know, basically people born into the country, getting a passport for traveling like as an infant. You know, people who've got citizenship, getting a passport, people renewing a passport. But you know, if you look at it, I mean, to make a comparison with what happened earlier on in Spain this year was with the kind of like a free gratis of issuing 500,000 passports to, from what I gather, a mix of, well, illegal immigrants that had come into the country. So we can't, it's difficult to differentiate, but like, as you said, if you look at it, it's 500,000 would be something in the order of that, you know, 15% of the country may perhaps woke up this morning and decided, hey, you know, I need my passport, looks to be getting a bit old.
But how many of the Irish, of the people on your island now, how many were actually born in Ireland and how many were born off the island?
Well, I mean, the current figure from what we're looking at with the Central Statistics Office is something of the order of 5.2 million. But if you look at, just to put it in a bit of a perspective, there's a, that other stat that we were talking about, since 2011, the birth rate has gone from 2.2 down to 1.5, and they're expecting this to go down to 1.3. Now, if you go back, say, maybe 20 years or so, the whether we had a population of somewhere around 3.5, 3.8 million. But what I'm getting at is, by based on that birth rate, it's not, we can't say that as an ethnic group or whatever way that you want to look at it, that we are exponentially kind of reproducing ourselves. We're not. We're below that replacement rate at this stage in terms of what, you know, it's classically spoken about, maybe with 2.2 children. So if we're saying 5.2 million, is it a case that it's still roughly 3.8 million are actual Indigenous people? Between emigration
and if their birth rate and their birth rates are exponentially higher than these, the quote unquote new Irish. So if they're going to show up and have five or six kids in a generation, the Irish will be gone, or just, you know, a minority on in Ireland. Can you put up? It's slide number 13. It's a like a cartoon. It's the cycle of housing. It's a, it's almost designed to crush family formation. It's so hard for a young couple to get married when you can't afford to live outside of your parents' house, where you're crammed into an apartment, more than likely. So they bring in the immigrants, and the immigrants get first everything. They get free housing, free cash cards. Everything is free for them. First chance at every job. And it's illegal and legal. They have their equivalent of like the H-1B, which is a total scam. You have in every little Irish town now, you have vape shops, Turkish barbers, all of these, you know, money laundering operations. But somehow they need new employees, and they can only get the right kind of employee from back in Pakistan or India, you know, or somewhere in Africa. This drives the housing price up because they're... The migrants, their housing cost is subsidized. They don't have to pay. And this puts the Irish out of the housing market. All right, that, we're going to come back and continue this discussion on the other side, but I find it interesting because the Irish, you just wonder, at what point are they going to stand up and fight back? We saw a little bit of it in Northern Ireland a couple months ago, that Ballymena, but it's so rare to see it. Even with all, you know, crimes happening like crazy. We'll see you in a minute.
It's 2 a.m.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks, you've seen the deplatforming, you've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when. Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Okay, if you can put up slide number six for a minute and then slide number five, it kind of puts the finger on the problem here. You know, the Irish never had colonies. People that are going to the UK from Pakistan or from former colonies of England, they can say it's payback. You know, I'm moving from Jamaica, I'm moving from India back. But Ireland never had any colonies. If you can leave that one up of India. India is so much bigger than Ireland, and its population is unbelievably greater. It's so unsettling now to be in traveling around Ireland and going to parks, downtown areas, and seeing just mobs of obvious third world people. And I'm not saying that they're all like, you know, trashy low rent guys that just got off the rubber boat. A lot of them are. But you see couples with children pushing prams to a person coming from India Ireland is paradise because Ireland has so much more land space per person. To somebody coming from India, Ireland is like a park. It's like a park with almost no people. And if you just brought 1% of India to Ireland, and there are entire pipelines set up now to just bring in more, you know, chain migration. If you brought in 1% of India, Ireland becomes Indian, and it will still look better than India. So there'll be another 1%. You could have 30 million Indians in Ireland, you know, in a generation, and it'll still be better than India. So this whole like lifeboat strategy of we have to save these poor people, it's Ireland has to save itself. It's like you're in a, you know, a 10-man boat and 50 people are trying to climb on board. It just can't be done. If you can throw up number 4, that's a like pie chart. And this is exactly what's going on. What's on this chart is exactly what's going on. And not just in Ireland, but in the West in general. They use the term minority. It's just a few guys from Africa. They're a minority. By all means, let's give them preferential housing. Let's give them a living allowance. But they're just going to not stop. Little Ireland is just going to be completely, totally overwhelmed. And it's coming. It's definitely coming. If you can put up number 12, it's the little girl in the classroom. This is the reality that Irish are facing now, being absolutely replaced in their own country. You know, there's your Irish primary school, the little leprechauns. They never voted for this. There was never a referendum to like, let's go extinct. Let's just wipe ourselves out. And if you can put up number 10, that's the diversity czar of Ireland. Check out who they're paying hundreds of thousands of euros a year to tell the Irish what nasty racists they are. There's your diversity czar. The country is so woke, and the people have no way to control their politicians. The political system in Ireland is so rigged. It's a total joke. It makes our elections look legit. There's no way you're ever going to get a nationalist who cares about Ireland. Irish politicians only care about their next gig working for a multinational corporation for double or triple the pay, or getting a job in Brussels for the EU. They look at Ireland like a stepping stone. This poor little island, they just want to get out of, using it as a stepping stone. And if the Irish people go extinct, who cares? I got mine. I'm sorry for that rant. Peter, are you still there? I'm sure you got some thoughts on it. You're there. You live there.
You were talking before the break about, you know, we were trying to get an idea on the size and scale of numbers. And so just I think that this is an important point. I just wanted to kind of bring it in. But and as to whether this is a relevant document now, but I refer to the Irish Proclamation, which we still see read out every Easter Sunday, you know, as our the 1916 rising, which took place on the Easter Sunday. And so, you know, this document is still, you know, it's a historical piece and it's still read out. Now, you know, if you care to look at the wording.
Like your Declaration of Independence. It's the Irish Declaration of Independence in a sense.
So, I mean, if you look at this, and just if people want to have a look at this, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just in the third paragraph, and I'm breaking this up a little bit, because just for the time that we have, but it does say this. It says, "We declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland." And then it goes on to say, it says, "The long usurpation of that right it has not extinguished the right," and it's obviously referring to the Irish people. And it then goes on to say that nor can it ever be extinguished except by the destruction of the Irish people. Now, what I take from that is that it was obviously imagined, or it was an understanding that we as the Irish people are on this island. We are the majority, and whether you want to, you know, look at that between north and south and that kind of thing. But we declare this land to be our land. And so I think what way this will go, and in terms of the actual accuracy of the numbers as to who's in the country and what percentage of it is Irish and what percentage is not, is that that may seem a little bit vague at the moment. But I think that eventually somebody will decide for the for an actual transparency of that to come to the fore and be able to present, to say to the from an Irish person's people's point of view, is that, hold on a second, guys, you are no longer a majority here to exert some sort of claim. That's the point, that is the direction that it is heading, to say, no, you are the Irish, you are an ethnic minority on this land, and you no longer have a claim. That's and, you know, as we may say, there's been no referendums about this. There hasn't been a kind of a national discussion, you know, and even that discussion as well with the people of the six counties of Northern Ireland in terms of the direction that this country wants to go.
Yeah, I call this this is like the end stage democracy doom loop. If you have a country that's, I'm just, you know, spitballing figures, if it's 45% woke liberals and 45% nationalist conservatives, and the 10 in the middle will blow whichever way the wind goes. But if you bring in another million, you know, or 10 or 15% that are foreign, they're always going to go with the woke globalist liberals. Now they've got a permanent majority. And the nationalists just become, you know, decline and decline until they're inconsequential. But that, you know, that proclamation of 1916 that says Ireland belongs to the Irish, I don't think that you can extinguish that. You know, no matter if they do bring in millions of Indians, Africans, you know, Muslims, there will still be Irish that say, you can't do this. I'm sorry, it's not legitimate. You know, we fought the British and we'll have to fight our own traitors, essentially, for doing this to us. The Irish never voted for it. And the system is set up so that there can't be any change. It's in the American context, the only choices you get in Ireland is like a choice between Fetterman and Lindsey Graham, you know, or you know, frickin' Frack. They're both neocon liberals at heart. Nobody can get to a national stage. The mixed martial art guy. He tried. He threw his hat in the ring for a little bit. It's impossible. What's his name? The fighter.
Conor McGregor.
But, yeah, McGregor. He talked about it. But the system is set up to completely preclude any chance of something. There could never be a Trump in Ireland. You know, a Trump coming from outside and winning in Ireland cannot happen. It's set up so that only cronies from the, you know, that inbred political class are the only ones that are ever going to be on a ballot. And meanwhile, every year, another 500,000 foreigners come in legally and illegally. You go to the park and you see hijabs and you see the Indian mothers in Indian saris pushing the double pram. And meanwhile, Irish kids can't afford rent. They can't get married. They can't have a house. It's just a tragedy to see this going on.
Yeah. What else was I going to say to you? That there's you know, you mentioned there just Ireland's czar in relation to racism and to kind of tell us all that how racist we are. And so, I mean, just playing to people's kind of emotions as some form of agitation, that to get people excited about this, that, and, you know, something similar like that we've seen as a kind of a delaying tactic that took place for so long in Sweden, where, you know, if you were to I'm sure there's been a number of kind of census or kind of on that in terms of what is the thing that you fear the most, and the thing that you fear the most, despite everything, you know, losing your house, losing your home, losing your family. But God forbid that I would ever be called a racist. And all of this kind of propaganda that's injected in terms of actually delaying or having just an outright honest conversation about, well, hold on a second, what is going on here? What is the direction that we're going?
Yeah, the brainwashing is so deep.
And everything that goes into it, like, you know, look, if I mean, this was a government minister, I think it was back in 2017, openly and publicly declared that the plan, and I think if we were maybe at that stage around 4.2, 4.5 million, that they were going to double the population or bring the population up to 10 million by such a, you know, within the, say, 15 years, 20 years or something like that. But, you know, the first thing that, you know, if you're kind of being sharp to this was, well, hold on a second. You're interfering here with the demographic. And if there are, you know, in terms of if we start bringing that in as part of the conversation, in terms of even for what it's worth, that the UN has criteria on what they refer to as genocide. A genocide being kind of altering of numbers of a particular nation's population. And we obviously have the kind of the kind of worst case image of that, which is, you know, the blood and gore side of it, or something like along the lines of a killing fields. But that can also be just to, you know, mass immigration, etc., and that kind of thing, to deliberately and actively readjust that particular nation's population and percentages and that kind of thing, and make one which was on one particular moment was the majority into the minority.
Yeah, I think that the way I look at Ireland in one sense as this, you know, lab experiment, that it's a little controlled environment. It's a small island, homogeneous. It was there, you know, the Irish lived on the island since the last ice age, almost 10,000 years ago. They never colonized anybody, so they have a history of fighting, at least in the 1920s. Fighting for independence from Britain, and in the 70s to the 90s, fighting Protestant versus Catholic in the North. So it's not as if there's no, you know, civil disorder in the past. But the lab part, one of the purposes of this lab experiment is to say, how far can we push a people? At what point will they rise up and you know, bring out the pitchforks and the flaming torches? You know, at what percentage of population replacement? So when we see the Irish completely lose their minds and go for the, you know, pitchforks and torches, then we know, okay, slow it down a little bit. And all of the other countries in the West that we're doing this to, you know, this massive Killarney plan, we're witnessing in operation this population replacement, third worldization. It's okay if Ireland, if we can just double their population and they still won't fight, we can do it anywhere. You know, that means forget about the rest of Europe. Forget Australia. They won't fight. You can bring in double their population, call them racists, and they'll cringe in the corner. I mean, it's actually pretty pathetic. You know, I would have hoped to see some more fighting by now, but evidently not.
Just to come back to the point in relation to how we started off when we were talking about the emergence of this, you know, so-called new IRA, and like when you conjure up the images and you conjure up or you think about as well that separation that did exist. I mean, you know, there was kind of, shall we say, you know, if you went back to the 60s and the 70s, of the labeling of Irish people as, say, as they traveled for work in the United Kingdom. But that is not something that exists anymore. I mean, we have more, you know, the proximity of, you know, to Northern Ireland, to the UK. You know, I mean, London is like kind of, say, 50 minutes of a flight away. It's all very, very close. But those types of splits or factions, etc., that doesn't exist. We have more in common. We have more in common with the people of, you know, Northern Ireland, the UK, Scotland and Wales, etc., than, you know, than we ever had. And I mean, you can see that in terms of the trade and the travel and that type of thing as to how it works, you know.
So when you see these the mobs in Ceuta, Spain, which is actually, you know, across from the Spanish mainland near Gibraltar, opposite Gibraltar, they can be in Spain now. They can be given bus rides by NGOs. It's not like they're hustling side gigs to make money. If you can put up, it's like slide number three. It shows all the guys on the boat. They are not paying their own way. They are being paid. It's an invasion army. That boat is holding 200 men. There's no military rubber boat like that made on the planet, okay? That's made in a Chinese factory for mass migration. All they have to do is inflate it on a beach in France and push it into the English Channel, go out a couple miles on a calm day in the summer, and then get on the radio and call a mayday, and an organization called the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, which is sort of like a quasi Coast Guard and a civilian. It's hard to explain backup Coast Guard. They go out and quote unquote rescue these men every day, hundreds. The RNLI is now being run by, you know, one of these NGO witches, these an open border globalist who's gloating about this, that they hate white people. I think they hate European people. And their way of just rubbing it in the face of the, you know, the evil white patriarchy is to just swamp the country with men from the global South. You know, low IQ, coming from savage countries where, you know, macheting people's arms off is like, you know, a hobby, and just plop them into the English countryside. The traitor government puts them up in hotels. This kills tourism because they'll take over a tourist hotel, convert it into a quote-unquote migrant shelter, cater meals to them, you know, in their restaurant, set up a better restaurant than you'd ever eat at. So all these thousands and thousands of fighting-age men, which are spread now across the UK and Ireland, what are they waiting for? You know, I think that eventually they're going to find out that the guns have already been brought in. And as bad as people think it is now in Europe, in the UK and Ireland, imagine when they're running around with AK-47s. You know, remember the Bataclan massacre in Paris like a decade ago? Imagine 10,000 AK-47s being put in their hands. You know, 3 years ago in Ireland, there was a man from Algeria who wasn't happy with the social services he was getting in Ireland. He had written a few letters and, you know, just wasn't happy with the amount of services he was getting. He'd never had a job in 15 years in Ireland, never had a job. So he went to a children's school and started stabbing children and a teacher. And he was just on trial last month. So his anger had built up because his expectations weren't met. You know, what he expected when he got to this promised land of milk and honey wasn't up to expectations. So he went on a knife rampage. Now imagine, give it a few more years, imagine 100,000, 200,000 of these men with AK-47s in their hands. I mean, this is something people have to think about. When you look at that picture of the boat with 200 men on it, that took a lot of coordination. That wasn't easy. Could have been easily stopped. But no, they're brought right into the UK, which means they can be in Ireland next week. So what's easier to smuggle into any country? A 20-foot cargo container goes on the back of these tip-off trucks. It's like, you know, something you see every day. They could be dropping off a 20-foot container at your neighbor's house. You'd think, oh, great, he's going to upgrade the house. You wouldn't think twice of it. 2,000 AK-47s fit in one of those 20-foot boxes. 2,000. And the politicians are all going to say, oh, my God, we had no idea. We just thought hundreds of thousands of you know, mostly Muslim, Afro-Islamic men, fighting-age men, we just thought they were coming here for a better life and then sponging off of the hotels we put them up in, you know, feeding them better than we feed our own people. Front-of-the-line privilege for everything. Well, I'm telling you, at a certain point, the guns are going to come out. And then it's going to be probably too late to do anything about it. I mean, in Britain, like probably a quarter of the police already are Islamic. You see the female police with the hijabs on arresting English people, you know, over tweets. I'm sorry, it's hard for me not to get pretty black-pilled. Ireland is the subject of the book I'm working on. I wish I was quicker writing, but Anyway, Peter, we're running out of time, so if you have some final thoughts in the next couple minutes.
In terms of your image with the boat, I mean, it's important to understand in terms of just a quick, simple analysis of this, in terms of a large group of men, because we're not seeing the story we're being told that they're fleeing war and, you know, what we'd expect to see in terms of women and children. It is typically exclusively, if it's 99%, it's men of a particular age. There are three situations within which we see a large group of men. We will see a large group of men maybe at a visiting football game. We will see a large group of men in a men's prison. And we will also see a large group of men in a military formation. That is a question that has to be asked as to why is it all exclusively just men? You mentioned as well there, just in a kind of a final thought there in relation to the children that were attacked and that court case that just took place recently. But I think it's important to understand with the way that the laws exist in both Ireland and the United Kingdom is that, and I would argue the point, some may argue that it's different, but I would argue the point that there is no right whatsoever to self-preservation. And so we can see the escalation in the crimes, the stabbings, the murders, the rapes, right? You know, not only Ireland, England, the UK and the mainland of Europe, but there is no right to self-defense. And this is, it's demeaning. It's many different things. And it's going, I would argue, it's just going
just on Twitter. And people have made the juxtaposition, like in the same week, there were rallies in the United Kingdom with hundreds of Muslims waving machetes, like a show of force. Like, we're here, try to arrest us, we're all swinging swords. And then like a day or two ago, a young British man came out of a sporting goods store with a baseball bat, and he was immediately arrested because the presumption is that he's going to do some harm with it. Maybe he wants to take it home to defend himself, because God forbid you should have a gun in the United Kingdom to defend yourself. I mean, people have defended themselves with a sword and gone to jail because they considered it like, yeah, you were defending yourself, but it was excessive. You should have just let the robber steal from you. You shouldn't have stabbed him with a sword in your own house. Anyway, we're coming right to the end. So thanks, Peter Connolly, for coming on at the last minute like this. And, I'll see you again the next time around that I get the call. It helps if I have a little more show prep time, but I think we did all right considering the limited time to prepare. So thank you, Alex Jones. Thank you, the entire AJS staff, for putting us together so quick. And I'll see you again next time around, maybe sooner or later. I don't know. I'll talk to you soon.
Dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methylene blue formula.
On the magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
Come on now, Bandit. We gotta get this truck on the road.
He's bound and down. Up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done?
Let's get a move on.
We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Keep your foot hard on the pedal, some devil mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana. We'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down,
We're gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.